Hey, what is good? This is the convo. I'm Norm, along with Mr. Snow, the one and only Michael Piaggiello, in a buried Chictawaga, New York. Mike, you were at the game last night, a 5-2 Leafs win.
Oh, I wasn't at the
game. Oh, you weren't?
No.
Well, I'm trying to build you up as some kind of hero, Mike. Just go along with it.
No, just to let everybody know, the last game that I would go to cover is a Leaf game is against Buffalo, because I see them here all the time and I usually know the outcome, because usually they don't show up. And last night, as opposed to many of the other games, they actually did.
Mike, I'm trying to build you up into some heroic figure. This is social media. It doesn't have to be true. Come on. You had to see the Sabres finally succumb to the Maple Leafs and then wallow your way back through the mountains of snow into Western New York, finding your way home and getting prepped for the show. That was the narrative, Mike. Thanks for destroying it.
Yeah, it's like David Duchovny in the X-Files movie going to Antarctica to find Scully. It's like, yeah, no. But anyway.
But Mike, you missed a very good game, according to a lot of people with the team who are on the ice and who have skin in the game. This was one of their most complete games of this season so far.
I agree with that. I did watch it, and I'll say that the talking points that Sheldon Keefe made before the game were completely different from what they usually do before the Sabres. I think they came to the realization after getting bitch slapped 3 times in a row last year, including the Heritage Classic, mm-hmm. that Buffalo brings the heat when they play Toronto, because it's their version of the Stanley Cup, because they never make the playoffs. And Toronto sort of just lollygags around, like, oh, we're just going to beat the team. You know, like, I mean, I'm sick of it, because these are points that you need to earn. And mm-hmm. I made the point yesterday in my column on Hockey Buzz that they've already given away points against Montreal, against San Jose, against Anaheim, against Arizona. And they can't afford to do that in a very tight race in the Atlantic. So against a team that is struggling, they did what they should do. They stepped on their neck and they killed them with mm-hmm. 3 goals in the first period. And it's, you know, it's refreshing to actually see that.
So they lost to New Jersey earlier this week. Mm-hmm. Any team right now would fall to the Devils. They've won 12 in a row, but I think the Leafs are going to end that streak this coming week in New Jersey. That was expected in a lot of ways because of the run that New Jersey's on. On the contrast, you have Buffalo shitting the bed. As you've mentioned, we've seen in the past, a struggling Buffalo team gets up for the Leafs, and the Leafs leave a lot to be desired. 3 goals in the first period on the power play, an even strength goal, which you think are rare these days, and I guess the stats bear it out. And then that interesting shorthanded goal, Mark Giordano with the net coming off. Explain to me what you saw in that and why they reversed that call.
Well, I mean, the determination was that Alex Tuck, who was the trailing player for the Sabres, who was chasing Mitch Marner, and Marner makes the drop pass to Giordano, that Tuck could have prevented himself from knocking the net off of its moorings. And then if you saw Giordano fanned on the puck, but shot it to the point that it would have gone in. It got past Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen and would have gone in had the net stayed on its moorings. So the office in Toronto determined that would have been a good goal. So that's why they ruled it a goal. Now, I was like, I mean, I thought it was going to be a penalty shot at first. Then they said delay a game penalty. I was pleasantly surprised that the call was a goal. I don't know about that one.
Well, the official was pointing to center ice, wasn't he?
I think he was pointing to the penalty box. I think he was pointing because on the ice it was called a delay a game penalty. Then it was video.
Do you think Marner, Marner is in? Was he cut off there, or is he getting cute with that pass to Giordano? Was that a smart thing for him to do?
Well, I mean, he was getting slashed by Tuck, and I mean, maybe he thought that that Luukkonen had the angle, and that if you drop it to Giordano, who, as he's on the breakaway, and you see, you know, he looks behind him to mm-hmm. see that Giordano's trailing him. He knew he was there.
Yeah.
The only thing I would be scary there is if that doesn't work and it gets past Giordano, then you have a 4-on-2 going the other way. So, I mean, it was a little risky, but I think he knew that Giordano was behind him. But I was a little surprised that it counted, but they did take advantage of a Sabres team that's struggling in confidence right now and got a 3-0 lead. And every time the Sabres sort of tried to make a move to get back in the game, the Leafs had an answer. They scored, you know, Buffalo scored a power play goal. Nylander comes back and gets a power play goal of his own, then a goal to lengthen the lead in the third period. So they were never really in danger, although against the Sabres, again, you know, I'm always waiting for the other shoe to drop, but last night it didn't.
This is the Convo, Norm with Mike. Thank you very much for your support. Like this content on YouTube. Make sure to subscribe to the channel. The Leafs outshot by 10 goals last night, 62% on the faceoff, 2-for-3 on the power play. We're in the box more, 32 hits. They outhit a team. That's incredible. 19 block shots. They put in the work, Mike. And if all things were considered and the Leafs played to their potential night in and night out, we wouldn't be surprised by the results.
No, I mean,
considering the history that the Leafs have with the Sabres and with teams that are inferior to them, we are surprised by this,
right?
And encouraged. It's kind of pathetic, but knowing what we know about the Leafs and what this team needs to overcome to take its next steps, maybe this is a big deal.
Well, I mean, right now it's a statement of sort of the determination of this team. I mean, after that disastrous West Coast road trip where they went 1-2-2, they've won 6 of 9. They've gone 6-1-2. So they've gotten points in 8 of 9 games.
Right.
The schedule has been heavy home.
Yeah.
And now they go on the road, I think, for 6 of the next 7. So, you know, things will balance out. And the consideration here and the concern is that, you know, when they go on the road and I'm looking at the schedule now, you know, New Jersey's the opener, Minnesota, Pittsburgh, Detroit, Tampa, Dallas, you know, there's some really good teams in there. There's also some teams that are struggling. So they have to those 6 games, they have to at least go 3-3. I mean, I think they're 3-3-2 on the road right now, but they've been taking advantage unlike past years, they've been taking advantage of their home games. And in this 3-game, you know, they have Monday against the Islanders to finish out the 3-game homestand. In this most recent 3-game stretch this week, the best player on the club has been Matt Murray. And that is an extremely encouraging thing because, I mean, obviously him getting hurt after the first game and being out a month is not ideal. Everybody was criticizing the fact that they, you know, this was a dumb, risky move to go with Matt Murray.
Well, it seems so in the beginning, Mikey got injured right away. So
right. They, you know, that
aren't up to lunch.
They should have stuck with Jack Campbell or whatever. And I'm like, okay, the question here about Matt Murray is not quality. It's durability.
Well, it's quantity. And what can he give you? How much?
Right. It's but you know, it's like, well, the thing I'm surprised at was that they felt confident enough in how healthy he was that they played him 3 games in 5 days. And he played really well against Pittsburgh. He is the only reason they got a point against New Jersey. I mean, New Jersey was up 2-1. He held them in. Nylander gets a fortunate goal deflecting off the shin pad of Jonas Siegenthaler. And then, you know, I'll talk about the overtime in a minute. But then last night he was, you know, he made a save late in the first period that normally a Leafs goaltender would give up. It was like with about 15 seconds left to go. I think it was Alex Tuck, and he made a ridiculous pad save. Mm-hmm. And normally a Leaf goaltender gives that goal up, and that gives the other team the momentum or infuses them with confidence. And Murray didn't allow that to happen. Now,
why is it because he's skilled, or is it because he has the experience, or a bit of both?
Yeah, I think it's both. Yeah, I mean,
he worked last night too, Mike. 32 saves, 34 shots against. So he was worked. It's not like, you know, he's been easing into action. the man has had to face rubber against some really good teams at a time when the Leafs need some momentum. And it's really, just keep your fingers crossed. It's really encouraging.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that, you know, I think they can't get carried away. I mean, maybe it's just my feeling of being cautious.
So Shalgren should play this week a few games or?
They have a back-to-back Friday, Saturday on the road at Minnesota on Black Friday afternoon, and then they play Saturday night against Pittsburgh. Third time in like two and a half weeks against Pittsburgh.
Right.
I would play Shalgren one of those games. Now, maybe they said that Samsonov was not available this weekend, but he might be available by next weekend. If he's available next weekend, then he could play one of those two games.
Mike, we can't be reticent. We can't be concerned if Eric Shalgren is between the pipes for a game here or there. He looked really good minding things.
No, I'm not.
These two dudes were trying to get their shit straight, right? So
they have to be thankful that Eric Shalgren played as well as he did in that stretch. But what I'm saying is, they may say, okay, well, we want our two best goalies in there, and the next opportunity for Samsonov to play is in those back-to-backs. That's what to do. I personally, I would, you know, you've got three games Monday, Wednesday, Friday this week. I would play Shalgren one of those games, or I would play Samsonov one of those games. Just not play Murray all these games and lump. I mean, he's hot right now. He's playing really well, but I think you have to still be careful that he doesn't get re-injured. I think one of the things, and throughout his career with Ottawa, with Pittsburgh, he's never played. I don't think he's played more than 50 games.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that it's sort of cooked in the books that you have to sort of take it easy on him, and you want him to be good and healthy when the time comes, which will be in April and May and June, hopefully.
And again, it's about the collective. This team is not the full complement right now. It's not playing its best hockey of the season, but 6-1-3 over its past 10, second in the division. We're not inaccurate or naive to expect that the Bruins will reduce their level of play, and the Leafs may get a little bit of an opportunity to overcome them, but then fend off the Panthers and the Lightning too. It's a collective, Mike, and to have a 1C in Shalgren, I've been impressed with his play, and I'm happy that you can go to a guy like that. Where in last year, when there was an issue, it's holy shit, if Michael Hutchinson ends up in the net, it's a really demoralizing thing for the guys ahead of them. Shalgren's done a really, really nice job in being there. That said, ideally to have Samsonov and Murray as your tandem, both healthy, both happy, both effective, that's the key. Mike, the Leafs are seventh in the league on the power play. We've talked in episode after episode about how the power play has stunk or it's been all world. You made a comment to me that, you know, you're not exactly concerned about it, but we should keep an eye on the fact that the Leafs are scoring more with the man advantage than they are 5-on-5. Can't this team satisfy you in any way, Michael?
No, it's not that. It's just the fact that, I mean, their 5-on-5 numbers were amongst the best in the league last year, and they're not this year. I mean, if you look at just at Austin Matthews, I mean, I think he led the league in 5-on-5 goals, and this year he's got 8 goals and 6 are on the power play. So I'm not saying, hey, you need
the damn Rocket Richard Trophy winner, just not living up to the hype.
You know, John Tavares has 10 goals, 6 are on the power play. I mean, you need your forwards to score 5-on-5. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, so, I mean,
they're setting themselves up for playoff success because that's how you score your goals in the postseason.
Well, but you also need to score to even stretch. I mean, I think it's a delicate balance. You need to take advantage of limited power mm-hmm. play opportunities when it comes to the playoffs, but you also need to score 5-on-5. Last night they got a goal from Kyle Yarncroak, but their bottom mm-hmm. six really isn't producing that well. I mean,
that's been a problem all season, Mike.
Well, the fourth line of Malgin, Aston Reese, and Kampf created a few scoring opportunities, but they didn't cash in. the third line. Yarncroke got a goal. Engvall had a nice assist on that goal. But, you know, basically that third line is not really made any kind of big footprint. And you know, I mean, they're playing Pontus Holmberg, a rookie, up the middle on that line. So, I mean, right now, and I think one of the concerns, and Sheldon Keefe even talked about it yesterday, Nick Robertson hasn't played in, I think, a week and a half. You know, they say he's doing great in practice, and he's, you know, he's hustling his ass off, and he's trying to get back in the lineup, but they're not using him right now. And honestly, it's like, when you have a player who's a young player who I think they need to play, and if they're not going to play at the NHL level, then they play it. They should play at the AHL level. Mm-hmm. Should be sent down to the Marlies to at least get some games in, and then if he's needed to be brought up and played, then he's ready to go. Instead, he's sort of just like, you know, he's going through the motions. He's practicing with NHL players, but I don't know how valuable that is compared to actually playing in games.
Mm-hmm. You know, a team that wins a championship has four lines. Obviously, the top two are the heavy lines. Those are the ones that score in terms of offense. But the third and fourth line should be heavy for different reasons. And they should be feared when they are on the ice. They are in ways just as effective as the guys who carry the mantle, at least optically. This Leafs team leaves a lot, and I've used this phrase, a lot to be desired on the back end. And again, because it's a bit of a revolving door and a bit of a carousel with guys mix and match. How is Sheldon Keefe like a certain player playing on the third line as opposed to the fourth? And if he's not producing, then he's demoted, then he's brought back up. I mean, that's something that can be worked on, but I'd really like to see the team get set back there and know that you have some checking lines and some lines that can shut other teams down and know that they are there, right? But hey, you know, what are we, 20, what are we, 15 games into the season now? If there's a time to reconfigure things and analyze things and experiment, now is the time. The Jake Muzzin experiment in Toronto may be coming to a hapless, unfortunate, sad end here, Mike. I don't know what else to say about this guy other than, you know, it might be time to have a chat with his wife and his agent and make an announcement.
Well, I mean, an announcement's not going to be made this year. I mean, it came out early in the week that he was long-term injury indefinitely, that he has a cervical spine injury, and that it's going to be medically reviewed in, I think they said, late February, which coincidentally is just before the trade deadline. So, you know, they'll check. I don't expect there could be any change. I expect that he's going to be out for the season. I know Pierre LeBrun, when the announcement came, said, you know, he went to see a specialist in California. You know, he's got a young family. But Dubas said he's, you know, it's, and he's saying the right things. He's got a young family. He's had a history now of concussions, neck injury, shoulder injury. You know, he's been a warrior. He's played a lot of games, a lot of tough games for L.A. and Toronto. So, I mean, the problem is that this team, the defenseman that they need is Jake Muzzin.
Right.
And Jake Muzzin's not going to be available. So what they're going to have to do before the deadline is find another Jake Muzzin or find
Luke Shen.
What's that?
Luke Shen.
No. Luke Shen couldn't shine Jake Muzzin's shoes. You know,
there you go, Mastodakis out of the Windsor, Detroit. There you go, buddy.
I mean, Luke Shen is a
bottom.
Luke Shen is a bottom pairing defenseman, and not a bad bottom pairing defenseman. I think he had 12 hits against the Leafs on.
You need another bottom pairing defenseman, like
right. That's the whole point. This team needs top four defensemen, and you know, and the question is, will they be able to get one? I had a discussion with someone who said, well, you know, I don't think they can get a top four defenseman, so maybe they should go out and get a forward because, you know, they always have a problem scoring in the playoffs. And that's a valid point, but I, you know, honestly, I don't think that with this defense, with Sandin, Liljegren, Justin Hall, Jesus, playing in a top six.
That did this you call team, Justin Hall Jesus?
No, I said, you know, that was an expletive. God forbid that they have to play Justin Hall in the top six. If they have, you know, if their defense going into the playoffs, I don't think they it's a question of whether they can win a round or not. I think they have to upgrade their blue line. You know, Jordy Benn might be able to play for them in the top six in a playoff scenario because he's actually a physical defenseman, but they need depth. But what they need more than anything is somebody who can fill Muzzin's shoes in a top four role. Right now, they have a 39-year-old Mark Giordano playing in a top four role. He was meant to be a bottom pairing guy. And that
scares me, Mike. I mean, that scares me. He's been good. He's been available, but he's 39. And he's doing more than what was expected of him originally, which we're appreciative of. And it's amazing to see the great Mark Giordano wearing the blue and white flexing. However, he's 39 and there's a long grind ahead.
Yeah. And he's got from what I'm looking at right now, he's got the best plus minus on the team at plus six. So he's played well for them. He's played big minutes for them, but yeah. I don't think that's sustainable. I think as the season goes along, even though he may be a physical freak, as the season goes along, you're going to break down. I think they need to have him on the bottom pairing. You know, if he's going to caretaker like one of the younger defensemen and cover for their defensive inefficiencies, mm-hmm. that's fine. But you need, you know, once you have Brody back, you have Riley, you have Brody, you know, then you know, whoever is your next, if it's Liljegren, I think he's capable of playing top 4 minutes. But right now you have a one, a two, and a bunch of fives and sixes, and that's not going to win you anything.
Well, I've been impressed with Jordy Benn. How many games now? Four games?
Three or four.
He has not looked out of place.
No.
But he hasn't done too much. He's done just enough. The thing with him, though, is he's another one of those bottom pairing defensemen, right? So when TJ Brody, when TJ Brody comes back, what do you do with Jordy Benn? Do you like Justin Hall? You can't just say get out of here now. I mean, he's they're all in on him.
Sure you can because he's hideous. But this is the thing. What I think will happen is because. Before Brody got hurt, they had split Riley and Brody. Riley with, had Riley with Liljegren. That worked for a while. They had Brody caretakering Justin Hall, splitting up that main number one pairing and having them sort of like making those pairings better. I mean, ideally, you want Riley and Brody playing together because they could play 24, 25 minutes of high level. Defense.
He doesn't think Riley's a number one.
He's this team's number one.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. I mean, you know, I swear to God, it's like everybody's like, well, you know, Riley's not really a number one. He's the number one that you got.
It's Justin Christ.
You know, but I'm sorry. It's just like the sort of attacking of Morgan Riley. It's like, you know, honestly, I don't think there may be. He's a top 15 defenseman in this league. He is. Now, does he have a big shot? No. Is he overly physical? No. He's extremely mobile. He's an offensive defenseman. He's gotten better defensively. He's the number one defenseman that you got. And if all of a sudden he's gone, you're going to feel it. I mean,
and the thing is, Mike V, thanks for the comment. Thanks for the support. How the fuck is Morgan Riley a pincushion in any which way, shape, or form? Like, what has he done that has been... how is he a pariah? What has he done that has made the fan base upset? What moment in this is in his career is he still trying to live down? Justin Christ. It doesn't make any sense.
No,
I like that one too.
Morgan Christ. Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't understand it. You know, it's like you could say that, you know, you attack the ones you love or you attack the ones that are there. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, I think this team should be, you know, Morgan Riley in all likelihood is going to, with this 8-year deal, is going to probably break every defensive scoring record on the Leafs. He's going to break Marius Salming's records. He's
389 career points, 673 career games. He wasn't getting as many points in the early part of his career, but he's been with the team now, what, 10 Since years?
2012 draft, yeah.
2012 draft. So he's been the definition of a stalwart, right? He's been the definition of a stalwart. He is not the prop. Not the problem. Whether he's a one or two, sure, he might be a two or somewhere else. But as you've mentioned, he's a one on this team. When TJ Brody comes back, that's going to make us feel better. It's what to do about Jordy Benn, Rasmus Sandin, Justin Kreist, and all these guys.
Let's not keep calling him Justin Kreist. No. It gives him too much credit.
It's the exclamation. It's the
Jesus Hall.
It's the reaction. Oh my god, we've got to wrap up. We can't go too long. You wanted to title this show Murrayaculous, or no, Murrayaculous.
Yeah, because I think Matt Murray right now in that three game stretch, you know, and it's only three games. You know, I mean, God forbid, you know, something could happen next week and he's on the IR again. But right now, you know, he was the reason that they earned five. He played really well in Pittsburgh. He played really well against Buffalo, and he stole a point against New Jersey. I don't think they're going to play him this kind of like games in a row all the time. I think that would be unwise, but the quality that you saw in the goaltending of Matt Murray in these three games is what I saw as the potential when, you know, even before they made the trade over the summer. And I know there are a lot of critics out there. Oh, this is a bad move. Oh, they should have signed Jack Campbell. Look at what Jack Campbell's playing right now at Edmonton. And, you know, everybody had their knives out when Matt Murray got hurt in the first weekend of the season. But I'm telling you, if he stays healthy, and that's a big if, he's a better goaltender. He's won two Stanley Cups, and that's no fluke. You know, it may be a fluke if you win one. He won two. And it was a superstar team with Pittsburgh, but he had to make the saves. And he's a quality goaltender. It's always been health. And with him, I think he's got his head on straight. He had some personal tragedy in his life with his dad. He had some concussion issues and other issues in Ottawa. I never thought that was a good trade because Ottawa was expecting Matt Murray to steal games for them. He was basically operating there with no support. He's got support in Toronto, and he's a good goaltender. And if he can stay healthy, they've got themselves a goalie.
Geez, they've got four games coming up this week and then into Detroit on the Monday. Just to follow up on Mike B, because we love him, his comment about Morgan Rielly, he doesn't think he's a pincushion at all. He likes Rielly, just doesn't dominate the games the way a true number one does. Well, guess what? True number ones don't grow on trees.
There's maybe really five or six of them in the league. It's like, Kale McCarr. Yeah.
The other thing, too, is the Leafs don't need a dominant guy who's going to, you know, Bobby Orr kind of defenseman. They have the four of the most dynamic offensive players in the league. They are the group that moves this team forward. There's no real expectation of a Bobby Orr or a Nick Lidstrom kind of guy, or, you know, a PK Subban at peak to, you know, there's no expectation of a guy like that to have to lift this team, right? Rielly is just a competent guy, and he picks up a ton of points. But, you know, again, if the team was more balanced in terms of, okay, well, you've got a couple of big shot defensemen, you've got some, a decent crew of offensive players, and there's balance without the heavy scoring. Sure, you'd want a guy who can take over the game, but he doesn't need to do that, right? And I'm not saying they wouldn't like to see him rush from end to end at some time and then punish somebody a la Dion Phaneuf. But it's not required in the way this team is composed. You know what I'm saying?
What they need is more. They need two more Morgan Rielly's is what they need. They need another or two more TJ Brody's. They are right now, as currently constituted, you know, with a healthy Jake Muzzin, they were short one top four defenseman. Now they're short two top four defensemen, and maybe a Liljegren can step in, but playing Justin Hall in a top four role is going to kill you. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, if he's a bottom pairing guy and you can limit his minutes, fine. But I'm telling you right now, if they have him playing on a second pairing in a playoff scenario, he will screw you.
Well, that's won't be his fault.
No, it's the organization. I'm not saying it's his fault. I'm saying it's the organization realizes his limitations. And they right now, they're in a position without Muzzin that they have to play Justin Hall in a top four role and play him 20 minutes a night. They need to get him down to 13 or 14 minutes. And if that means playing, you know, you've got 50 or 60 games before the end of the regular season, where you can find out whether Sandin and Liljegren can handle those kind of minutes in a playoff scenario. Because I know if you're putting Giordano in that role, I mean, that I'm sorry, that's just too much to ask.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like the Leafs are without bodies. It's the type of bodies, right? Do you think that it's this crew ride or die until there's an opportunity closer to the trade deadline? Or so they're just going to have to figure it out.
Yeah, like,
have to figure it out. Coaching staff's going to figure it out. The players are going to have to either be more aggressive or regress.
The only top four option out there before, I would say, Christmas is Chychrun. Now, Chychrun probably gets traded in the next couple weeks. It seems like Arizona wants to move. Chris Johnston told us on the Off the Post show a couple weeks ago that he doesn't think that Toronto's in on Chychrun. There's been some other indications that they are. I don't think they are.
So if the defensive unit isn't in a crisis, but it is in it is put together in a way that can be improved and needs to be improved, why aren't they in on Chychrun?
I just don't think that they value Chychrun as much as other teams do. I mean, Ottawa seems desperate to make a move. Maybe St. Louis. I don't think the Leafs are willing to give up the package that Arizona is looking for Chychrun. And the thing, you know, the durability question is a big thing. He's been hurt a number of times over the last few years. He's 24 years old. I mean, the contract is tantalizing, the talent of the player is tantalizing, but you need the guy on the ice, and you know, he's coming off two surgeries. They need somebody who's going to be there. He plays a rough style of game, and they would like that, but I don't think that they're willing to make that kind of move. Mm-hmm. And they want to make a similar move. They want to trade for a defenseman that has term. I just don't think that they're willing to do it for Chychrun. Now, the thing is, if they can't find somebody that's a fit, then they go to the rentals, and then you're talking about probably January, February before they make that move. So right now, I think once Brody comes back, I think they're going to stick with the seven that they have until it gets closer to the deadline, and then maybe they look for a bargain or two. But I don't foresee them going in on Chychrun, but I could be wrong. One phone call, as they always say, one phone call could change it.
Yeah. There's an expectation among the fan base. There's a hopefulness among the fan base. There's a feeling of dread amongst the fan base, and there's a lack of confidence among the fan base. We are a conundrum, Mike. We are all over the place. We got to get out of here, but real quick, Corey Parrish, I'm with you, Mike. Hall is a disaster, and the only ice he should see is the ice in his drink at the airport on the way out of Toronto. That is just so fucking mean, Corey, and we love you for it. Alan, I think he's Florida or somewhere. He's just all baseball talk. Wanted to get our impressions of the Teoscar Hernandez trade to Seattle. I think they're making room for Brandon Nimmo.
First they
he's a stat darling, and Shapkin's like those kinds of guys.
What they got back in the deal was, you know, a good reliever. Hanson had great stats. Maybe he'd be a setup guy for Romano, but they didn't get a ton. I don't know a lot about the other pitcher that they got. And Teoscar Hernandez was 1 year away from free agency. Right. So I don't think they were going to pay him. So now Nimmo, I mean, they're talking about 6 years, $20 million per season, like him going to Colorado or the Blue Jays.
The money's insane, Mike. You know that.
I don't think he's worth that. Honestly, like if I was a team out there, and I'm hoping the Yankees do this, the guy I would want is Benintendi. I mean, I think Benintendi.
I thought that was a done deal.
No, he hasn't re-signed with the Yankees.
I thought like that was going to happen.
Well, I mean, I would like it for it to happen, but there hasn't been any kind of. And I don't think they're going to do anything now until they sign Judge.
The Jays feel like Nimmo is about to hit peak or about to have that run where he's at his best, and just coupled with where the Jays are in terms of their level of play, I think they're going to be, they could be picked to win the division.
They want Nimmo because he's a lefty and because he gets on base and he's an above average defensive outfielder. So maybe he plays center and they move Springer to right. You know, limit the wear and tear on Springer. But
anything on Judge? Are you hearing anything about him? I mean, is it
the only thing I've
down to the Yankees or Giants kind of thing?
No, I mean I'd be really surprised if he signs anywhere other than the Yankees.
Me too.
I mean, I've heard $40 million for 8 years, and I think that's probably. You know, he'd be the highest paid player, highest paid batter in the league. At what point does the team fire Dubas? Well, I don't think he gets fired at all during the season. And honestly, if his contract is up at the end of this year, if they decide that they're not going to renew, then he just goes and they're not firing him. He's like, they just agreed to part. I mean, I've heard, since this is the thing, I've heard a couple things about, well, even if they win a round or two, you know, Dubas may go someplace else. Honestly, I'd find it hard to believe that Kyle Dubas, after finally getting, you know, breaking the glass ceiling, so to speak, and then winning a round or two and making that, he would leave, you know, the best job or one of the most prominent jobs in hockey to go someplace else, unless he gets a multi-year deal and he's got safety for 10 years or something like that. I don't think it's happening.
Or he has a falling out with the brass.
Yeah, I don't know.
We know that Brian Burke's hanging around, so I'm looking for another gig. So much for a short show, Michael.
Yeah, we talked too much.
What's your latest column on hockeybuzz.com?
It's the podcast Sunday with the Leafs combo. So there you go.
Well, thank you very much for your endorsement. OG's Converse, thank you. Make sure to like the content, subscribe to the channel. When I post the link to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, whatever, make sure to like that too, or listen to that, subscribe to that. We appreciate your support. Let your friends know what we're up to, and that we do a show from London and Buffalo every week, Sunday morning. Sometimes it's a bit earlier, sometimes it's around 10. So you just got to kind of get up, have your coffee, and be ready. Okay, big week for the Leafs ahead. Hopefully it's a positive one, and we'll talk about it in 7 days. For Mike, I'm Norm. We're out.